This is Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Joining us, as he does every Thursday, is Boston Globe columnist Alex Beam. And as Marjorie and I do every Thursday when Alex comes on, you know this to be true, Alex, we marvel at how the universe conspired to give Alex Beam the perfect name because, like a laser beam, Marjorie said this, he always is right on point and drives cats crazy. It's just this. Now, Alex, hi, Alex. Before
they don't
we start,
shine me in the eyes of pilots trying to land at Logan.
Okay, Alex, yeah, before we get started, you were whining the last couple of weeks that you had not, I think it was during Pledge Week, that you wanted a WGBH Echo bag. And we didn't have one available.
That's exactly right.
We actually now have, it's sort of a mock-up. We have one for you here. And
is this a real?
It's not.
I can't even
exactly
see on the air.
It's a little denim thing, and we hand wrote WGBH on it. But it's yours to keep and
this
do whatever
look
you want
genuine
with.
Genuine.
I think it's quite nice.
Oh, really? That's not the Echo bag, is it?
I printed the WGBH right on it. What do you mean it's not? Of course.
If only we were on your vaunted television show, and nobody would
much
see
okay,
this. Okay, sorry, just a joke. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So you gave us to read this very moving story about this woman that started. Why are you making faces?
I can't associate myself with a moving
about
story.
This church that this woman started on the Boston Common for homeless people. You did. That was one of the things. You're looking at me like I'm out of my mind.
No, I sent you a link to the Cathedral on the Common website. Which
tell
is,
people about this.
Well, it's this kind of astonishing thing that has exploded. I kind of analogize it to First Night. It started in Boston. A woman I've spoken with only by telephone, named the Reverend Deborah Little, knew that some homeless people congregated at the Cathedral of St. Paul's, which is the Episcopal Cathedral on the Boston Common, and Easter in either 1994 or 1996, I can't quite remember straight, she decided to have sort of Easter Mass on the Common for the homeless, not for anyone else. It's not extraordinary to have church outside, if you will. It's like having class outside.
Right.
But she had church outside for the homeless, like they were to participate. And to get way ahead of the story, astonishingly, she no longer does that for a living. For a living, she curates a website, Little Ministries, something or other, and 250 churches around the world now have such church services specifically for a homeless congregation. And it's a spiritual ministry to the homeless. And then just to get ahead, my next column, which you guys are generous enough to talk about when I come in here, my next column, which will appear on Saturday, is about a church that spun off from Deborah Little's original ministry, which is called the Outdoor Church of Cambridge. And
where is it in Cambridge?
I just have to laugh because the last three Sundays I've been at the Porter Square Tea Stop.
Is that where she does this?
This is Jedediah Manis and Tom Hathaway.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry. This is a spinoff, if you will.
I understand that.
Okay. And the Outdoor Church of Cambridge is every Sunday. I did not go in the depth of winter. I'm a fair weather Christian, if ever there was one. At 9 a.m., you can go. You be at the Porter Square Tea Stop, and they set up. I described it as an altar on a shopping cart. It's like a kind of little altar on rollers. They roll it up there, 9 a.m., more or less. They start a church service, and at 9 a.m., more or less, homeless people congregate to the service, whom they all know, of course, by now. The Outdoor Church in Cambridge has been going on for several years. And then they do that again on the Common at 1 p.m.
Boston Common or Cambridge Common?
Excuse me, the Cambridge Common.
Cambridge Common,
yeah. Because it's the Outdoor Church in Cambridge. And the two reverends devote Sunday to, as I my infelicitous choice of words, to wandering around Cambridge, making contact with homeless people and giving them sandwiches, which are often made by youth groups at other churches. And in the winter, they give them socks. Now, even though you didn't ask, the reason I wrote about this was because I became very deeply intrigued with Reverend Manis and a long conversation we had about what they were doing. And virtually one of the first things he said to me is, "We are a church, not a social welfare agency." Another thing he said to me during that conversation is, you know, we don't get a lot of big foundation support because we don't have a path out of homeless. All these kind of cliches that you hear. We are delivering, if you will, spiritual food to the homeless. And that kind of got my attention because it was a little counterintuitive for me as a bourgeois newspaper reader, oh, the homelessness is a pathology. We've got to cure these people. It's almost as if every homeless person is a potential undergraduate at Wesleyan College, and I was sort of learning something different. And I know dangerously little now.
For this thing, for example, this thing at the Porter T stop, did roughly the same group of homeless people come every Sunday? I mean, this is like appointment service time for them?
I would cautiously answer that yes, because I've only been three times. It's a small group. And as I also sort of sardonically noted in my column coming out on Saturday, I've been going to suburban churches, and like coffee hour is a big deal for the homeless. You know, suburbanites love coffee hour. You know,
right.
They get together and they talk about like who got a B+ in the high school test. Well, I did kind of notice that at 9 a.m., like the reverends are present, a few homeless people are present, a few visitors like myself are present. But at 9:40 a.m., when the Dunkin' Donuts gallon of Joe comes out and Jed Manis has this great carton of donuts, suddenly there's a lot more homeless present. I say that in the spirit of religiousness. But they know these people, they keep tabs on them. And I want to make one other point that just so that I for context, when I say I was genuinely intrigued with this idea of worshiping out of doors, sort of naked. You know, you're in Porter Square. Everyone's staring at you. I finally realized, like, a church is like a fortress. Like, those walls are there for a reason, so you can do this in private. But in the middle of Porter Square, there's nothing private. It's just you, and you're at church. And I mean, I found it very open, very stark, very naked, very fulfilling for me personally. Now, where was I? I've totally lost.
This is like
track.
A Proustian sentence. You've been talking. I mean, this, even though it's a very interesting story, interesting story.
So one of the things I can't help but think is this winter obviously has been freezing and snow. And so this is going on when it's 12 or 15 degrees in a foot of snow.
Yeah, I did finally, as it were, catch up to the caboose of my train of thought. Yes. And Manis was hoping that the Boston Globe would do a different kind of story because some of the homeless people have children. And another thing, again,
What do you mean?
Different kind of story, how?
Well, in that the sheltering isn't 100% perfect. It's pretty darned good, especially in Cambridge, which was the point I wanted to make for context, because I'm talking about how these people deliver religion to the homeless. I mean, to be fair, Cambridge and Massachusetts generally, you know, it's an extremely generous community for social services for the homeless. There are, you know, three shelters within, shall we say, T distance. These congregants seem to generally spend the night either at the Pine Street Inn or at 240 Albany Street, or, wait for it, an extraordinary so-called dry shelter run by Harvard students at the University Lutheran Church in Harvard Square. Arguably, I gather, sort of the best run and best ministered shelter, but it's a dry shelter. And it's even just the very few conversations I've had with homeless people, a lot of them don't want to go to a dry
meaning
shelter.
You have to be in recovery?
No, meaning
just can't drink.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't look drunk, you can't look high, and you can't drink or do drugs on the premises.
Okay.
And it's odd because there's almost like an honor system, you know. I did talk to some people. I said, well, why don't you go over there? Because the Harvard kids, man, they got quite a setup. I just can't. I'm not dry.
You know, staying really on the same subject about people down on their luck, I don't know if we should call this our It Could Be You segment, but I think
this is a stop complaining.
There
for the grace of God go I segment.
You also alerted us to a story that is eye-opening, to say the least, about somebody who you think you may have worked with in an earlier life.
I know I worked with Joe Williams.
Joe Williams, former editor at the Globe.
Former editor at the Boston Globe, former reporter, editor, and deputy Washington bureau chief for the Boston Globe. Definitely was the living editor. I mean, there was this. First of all, he's written this astonishing article on the Atlantic Magazine website, so he's obviously a gifted writer and storyteller. He did cruise around the globe as an editor, which in a way I'm thinking might not have been his actual calling. But the thrust of this, I mean, I'm happy to summarize it.
Please do.
This guy is indeed exactly like us. He's the deputy bureau chief of a reputable newspaper in Washington. He goes to Politico. Not only is he a good political reporter, he's on TV all the time. In other words, as he himself says, his career is very much on an upward trajectory when suddenly for various, well, for two reasons, if not three, he loses his job at Politico. He commits what Michael Kinsley used to call a gaffe. And when Kinsley talks about a gaffe, it means he told the truth and thus was vilified for it. You know, he made this kind of offhand comment that even I, as really a Mitt Romney supporter, don't find the least bit offensive. He said, I guess, on MSNBC, Joe Williams said, well, I'm paraphrasing, it's just basically pretty obvious that Mitt Romney's less comfortable in a sort of diverse town hall setting and more comfortable when he's on Fox and Friends with his white pals.
Quote, they're white folks who are very much relaxed in their own company, is his exact quote.
Right, and what could be more true? I'm a pro-Romney guy. Romney is the whitest American on earth.
Well, Joe Williams is also an African-American. He thought that played into part of why he was vilified.
Yes. I mean, and then again, a separate discussion we're not having right now, but this, the internet outrage machine.
Yes.
Which went ballistic. I often use the term lynch mob. I know it's not appropriate, but it's nuts. It's effectively unseated him.
But we should say, in all fairness, it unseated him after Andrew Breitbart, who obviously is now dead. Andrew Breitbart, after this, he had seen this on MSNBC. Found on Williams' Twitter account what even Williams acknowledged was a crude Romney joke.
Can you paraphrase that?
Because the joke is not.
Because I don't know what the joke is.
The joke is not there. He just characterizes himself as a crude Romney joke, and then a little more searching is done. And
this is the bad part.
And it turned out that there's a headline on something called Fishbowl DC, who obtained court documents that said ex-Politico White House correspondent Joe Williams pled guilty to assaulting ex-wife, and at least Williams' explanation is that he had completed 6 months of probation. He had signed a court order to stay away from his wife, so he had been involved in something. But the story is not so much about his fall from grace almost overnight at age 50. The story is, after that, he can't get a job anywhere. He gets a job at an unnamed sporting goods place, essentially as a retail worker, as a clerk. And this piece he writes, which I thought was fabulous for The Atlantic, and it's called My Life as a Retail Worker, Nasty, Brutish, and Poor, if you want to check it out, is about life as a retail worker. Sum that experience up, Alex Beam.
Well, it's just a place none of us wants to go. And the fact that someone exactly analogous to us in education and competency, he's at Marathon Sports or something, but I assume this is a complete recapitulation of a book I never read, Barbara Ehrenreich's book, Nickel and Dime.
Yeah.
But Joe makes crystal clear with this just painful writing that, you know, a $10 a week job at the...
$10 an hour
job at the near bottom of the American economy. And we're now talking about millions of jobs. We know that Obama talked about this very subject just yesterday. But all these Walmart jobs, I just had lunch at McDonald's, unbelievably, and a guy is cleaning up and the manager comes over and says, Jose, put this cap on. So Jose has to put on a cap for the bacon double cheeseburger. In other words, they use these people as signage, among other things. But
what did you eat at McDonald's?
The salad. But Joe, okay. Williams,
he did not have a
salad.
I
mean, the things that are happening are just very difficult to swallow. He has to agree to be searched, what they call shrinkage, they're obsessed with stealing.
Yeah.
So he has to agree to be searched if he goes to get a frap across the street.
If he wears a hoodie or a big jacket to work, Stretch, his boss, his supervisor, says, we'll have to pat you down.
Yeah.
It is the most dehumanizing.
And staying after hours, too, after a shift to clean
and not getting paid
vacuum,
for it, by the
clean
way.
The toilets, clean the bathroom, and do the garbage.
I couldn't agree with you more. Which the hours add up, and then it's like apparently a boy-girl thing he describes that only the men can haul the trash out to the dumpster, which is surveilled by a camera, so they don't even trust their own people to throw away the trash because they think they might be stealing from the trash. But it's done in twos. In other words, one person goes out to monitor Joe, who's emptying the trash. You're exactly right. I mean, at both ends of the day, it's all free time. You have to get there early. That's free time. You have to stay late. That's free time. And, of course, the other detail that I'm sure none of us missed is that they keep hammering down his hours, and he kind of doesn't get it. He's a little naive. And, of course, they want to make sure that he doesn't trip the 35-hour-a-week.
So he gets benefits.
So he gets benefits.
You know, before we leave this topic, though, the point of this piece, I'm quite sure, is he wants to say, well, much of the world, and including the majority of Americans, are supporting the president's effort to raise the minimum wage. We just discussed it in state with Deval Patrick. You should also, and he hopes they do, I'm sure, he also says you should know what life is like for minimum wage workers, which is a whole other kind of thing. Alex, last thing for you. And Marjorie and I were having a debate this morning as to whether or not to even touch this, because she says it's too complex. I said, here's what we're going to do.
I hope it's math.
We're going to say to Alex, you have 45 seconds, which during which we will not interrupt you, during which time you have to describe to the listeners what the controversy about Herbalife and Ed Markey is. And here's what I'm going to do.
45
I'm going to time
like
you. You have 3 seconds to think about, and then we'll start. So listen carefully. It's a big issue. 2, 1, go.
Okay. What the listeners need to know is that many high-profile public policy issues of the last decade that you actually think are about this policy versus that policy. For instance, for-profit education. You think, oh, well, that was legitimate. They were taking money out of veterans' pockets. BS. It was all driven by short sellers. What I'm telling you is a lot of these stories that you read in the news are actually driven by Wall Street manipulators who are seeking to drive down the publicly traded stocks of companies. In the example of the bogus investigations into the for-profit education, Kaplan, which was owned by the Washington Post, was driven way, way down. Right now, Ed Markey is caught hilariously, been gulled. By the way, you notice Elizabeth Warren was too smart to get caught in this. You know, Ed Markey is fronting for Bill Ackman this essentially, well, I don't know, I'm not going to use any bad words, but he's just a short seller. He's just a guy. He doesn't care about the Hispanics or getting cheated by Herbalife. Believe me, nothing means less to Bill Ackman. And now Ed Markey is like mired because he's writing letters on this guy's behalf, trying to interfere with the Federal Trade Commission, blah, blah, blah.
Because
well,
if Herbalife,
I'm sorry. The subhead read that he made a $1 billion bet that this Herbalife would fail, and then he lobbied to make sure it would fail, you know, with his influential connections in Congress.
Congresspeople, state legislators, yeah. Asking, say, call for investigations.
Yeah, Tito Jackson, for those of you following at home. Larry Raskey, for those of you following. Let's get the names out there. They should be very proud of their nefarious role. You know, as ludicrous front people and puppets for a Wall Street billionaire, Bill Ackman, who has a nice house on the Cape, I'm told.
He does?
I believe he
Where
does.
Where on the Cape?
No comment.
Okay.
Where on the Cape?
It's like Truro area, I believe.
Really? Truro area, okay.
Yeah, believe me, we're not getting out there because there's a fence.
That took you a minute and 20 seconds.
Wow.
You know what the most significant thing
upsetting.
You just said here?
Is it upsetting? I mean, people need to know. People need to have their eyes open. That's all.
No, the most important point you made was the point you made, which is often it has nothing to do with the substance of a public dispute about whether a company is meritorious or not meritorious.
Well, that's right. You don't know.
If they're betting.
Should you take Herbalife or should not take
Herbalife? Well,
Herbalife
is,
no
I mean, it's a fat target. There's several. The for-profit thing really bugged me because a young friend of mine at like some big foundation was testifying before Congress. And to me, they're just cat's paws for Wall Street manipulators. Mine is a very dark, by the way, very dark and extreme view. Just FYI, if you own stock in robot surgery companies, boop, it's too late because they've been massively shorted. And they've, you know, what you do is you have to leak all these like stories to Wall Street Journal reporters. That's the absolute best case scenario where they go, oh, robot surgery, not as good as you thought. Google Wall Street short sellers and robot surgery. You'll see what I mean. In other words, that's another whole sector that they've decided to collapse. Again, they've chosen well. Robot surgery is semi-bogus, although there's a lot of money been invested in
it. What we would like you to do is to tweet us at BOS Public Radio to tell us if you have any idea what Alex is talking about. And when I'm serious. And when he is back next Thursday, then it'll be an experiment for us. If a story of some complication can be told by Alex Beam each Thursday, it could be a regular feature in what was a minute and 20 seconds. Let the listeners
but
decide.
Is that fair to like limit me to such a
show? No,
why don't you
it's
let
not
me like
fair.
Hold forth and
no,
like,
but if
I'll
you,
go through my talking points.
Well, if you get past the initial threshold in the minute and 20 seconds, then we'll maybe give you a
so
chance.
So you gave me a B+, right?
It was quite. It was actually
excellent.
Pretty good. It
okay.
was quite
but
good.
But we still don't know. Should you buy Herbalife or should you not buy Herbalife? That's
well,
the
first of all, you shouldn't
question.
Take Herbalife. Okay. The dubious supplements. Second of all, you shouldn't become a franchisee because you'll never make any money. And third of all, if you have stock in Herbalife, now that's a very complicated question because Carl Icahn's on the other side of this bet. I would just be very, very careful. So,
now,
mean,
Alex, yeah, before
yes.
you go, when you leave, you know what we're
Thanks
doing?
Thanks for the eco bag, by
You're
the
welcome.
Way.
Before yeah, okay. you leave, you know what we're doing? We are celebrating in a few minutes with our listeners the 25th anniversary of the World Wide Web. How are you celebrating today?
I am turning off all my internet connections.
You're going dark?
I'm going totally dark. It's the only time I'm happy.
That is beautiful.
I'll be like the Malaysia Airlines plane. Oh, that's a terrible analogy.
That is really low rent.
Charlie Pierce once got thrown off public radio for a similar analogy.
Well,
I'll tell you when we're off
here. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Hey, Alex, it was great to see you. Enjoy the bag.
Take care. Alex Beam is a columnist.
By the way, it is a bag
Globe.
And it says
WCBH. Yeah, but it's not a real eco bag. I've been screwed.
Yeah, he's a man of great secrecy. He's written many books, but he doesn't want to know, want the public to know what those books are, at least at this possible moment. Up next is Jim Justo. We are asking about the internet. Turns 25 this week. How has it changed your life? Up next on 89.7 WGBH.